So I'll just share some things that we found in our experience over here. But before that, I might mention that we had our contact with the Lutheran Church was particularly made in Sweden. Can you imagine that? And in Finland, where in Sweden we met Dr. Ezra Gebremedhin, is that right? He was head of the Lutheran Church in Ethiopia, and of course couldn't work there anymore, so he has become the research assistant in patristics at Theological Institute of Uppsala. And so we had a very interesting time because he was helping me with the church fathers and the dreams. So that was interesting. And Magnus Lidbeck, who is a friend over here, and Dr. Kennedy Kisanga from the Tanzania Church, Lutheran Church, and head of the Lutheran Church in Tanzania, I understand. So we've had some very interesting and good contacts there. Our contact here was that, as I mentioned this morning, I was sent by a Columbia Basin Mission, which was operating in an interdenominational form to reach some of these communities. And so I was sent to establish a church here. That was 50 years ago, so I needed a lot more experience, and I got some too. But I lived in the dormitory here, ate with the men. There were these houses up here, the administration, that was quite a class system. This set up here, and then there were 800 miners in the dormitories, and then there were 100 homes up there, which is called Miners Village. I don't know where the name Winston comes from. It wasn't familiar to me. But we lived in, well, we had, someone graciously took us in because I was promised that they'd build me an apartment. One man was going to do that. Instead, he built two small ones out of the same place and rented them out. So we had no place to live. And they put us up in a very gracious family from Oklahoma, put us up in the attic, which was 12 feet wide and 3 feet in the middle I could walk in. And the bed was in the middle and the clothes were dried above us. So it was quite an experience. I was married in the middle of the year, went to Detroit to get married. Lily came here and we shared our place there. Lily, did you want to add something? The mine was in operation. First of all, I worked inside in the assay office where we would weigh the ore, little tiny samples of ore, to find out how much gold there was in that ore. And a very intricate scale. It looks very much like the scale that's up there in the museum now. But it would weigh a pencil mark. So it was very, very accurate. And I worked in that first, and later on I worked outside in the area, wherever it was needed. So we had a year and a half, and I needed to finish some academic work. So we moved down to Lake Chelan, or down to Chelan Falls, and commuted for a little while, and then went off to Chicago and continued our work. So that was our experience. Are there some questions along this line?
Where did you hold services here?
Oh, they were held in the Recreation Hall, is what it was called. That's the center, is it? Yeah.
Where we had the service yesterday.
Yes, where we had the service yesterday. Yes. Most of the people that attended came from the Miners' Village. And there were very fine families there. So we had a great time. The snow was 7.5 feet on the level, 30 feet of snowfall that winter. We had long-handled shovels, and we had our car brought up here. And So the roads were kept open for the mine, the mining trucks with all their buckets and so on, but it was only from here to Lucerne, and our car would be off and deeply buried. So it was an interesting experience. I was particularly glad to be able to get up to Copper Basin this morning, because that's one of the last beautiful scenes that I saw as I hiked up there and just came over the rim and looked down in that beautiful basin, that little valley, and there came a deer, a huge deer with a big antlers, came right into the picture. I said to Lily, our honeymoon is not over until I bring you back to see that little valley. I got her up to Copper Falls, but I haven't got her up to the basin yet.
The path is clear and dry?
The path is clear up into the basin about a little over halfway to the falls. And then there was snow and rock slide, and so that's as far as I got. But that satisfied me. It was a good experience, and of course I needed much more experience just coming out of school and setting up a work here. But nevertheless, it was a very, very worthwhile time. And it's always considered one of the most beautiful spots that we've been in. So we've been looking forward for years to come back to Holden again. And since now we had a seminar in the Los Angeles area, Ventura, and then one in near Banff, near Calgary, we thought we'll make a trip out of this. So my brother and his wife are here. We're traveling together. So we've enjoyed that. Any other question? Yes.
I wonder if Lily, if you could tell us a little bit something about what you did while you were here. What it was like to be a wife in the wilderness.
Well, we all probably have expectations as to how we will find things where we go. And I must say this, I had a wonderful mother, never pampered us. She was very loving, very kind. She took great pains to train us, to teach us, but she didn't tolerate complaints. So I was well prepared for the scene up here. It was different, but it certainly never occurred to me that I would take off at a time when I wasn't ready to take off.
I might add that she, before we were married, she was in some of these very beautiful homes, large places in Detroit, and came here, living in this in that attic, and I only learned 2 years later that she cried herself to sleep.
What did you mean when you used the term class system? I thought you used the term earlier.
Class system. Well, the administration was one class. The miners were another, and the engineers another group.
Did you have to cook, or was that you ate in the dining room?
When I was here alone, I ate in the dining room. But then we were married.
We had the home. There was a home that was allotted to us, and a lovely place. And so we were able to keep house in quite a normal way.
You mean the attic of the lovely place?
Well, for the beginning, but then later we had a home that we lived in, and we appreciated that very much, because it gave us the opportunity also to have others in from the village here. Particularly, we tried to do that as much as possible in order to establish a contact, because when people have not been accustomed to having contact with people in the ministry, they're pretty shy about that. So we tried to break down that kind of barrier and let them know that we were quite human and could enjoy people of any walk of life.
And Lily has a gift of hospitality. She's always had people in, and then she shares also in the lecture series that we give. Thank you. All right, then we shall take off briefly on the subject of dreams and visions. And why do you get into a subject like that? Of course, your director here and I had a good conversation. We both studied at the Jung Institute. And he asked me how I got into it. Well, I can tell you, I was in a church that was not at all open to the area of dreams and visions. I was a Baptist pastor for 25 years. I came from a Mennonite background, by the way. A Baptist pastor for 25 years. And then I faced some areas of need. And usually in a crisis period is when we are forced to open up. And then I was seeking some help because I knew there was more than what I had. And so there were some, in that time of desperation, there were some seminars held by Agnes Sanford. She and her husband, some of you know her name, they had the schools of pastoral care, starting with the Episcopal priests and then opening up to many others. And so we attended that. And Larry, and Dr. Morton Kelsey gave a lecture on dreams. I didn't pay any attention to it because I had many other things I had to learn at the time. But the next year he gave a lecture again, and I said, all right, Lord, if you have something to say, I'll be willing to listen. And I had a dream. I tell you, I'll never forget that dream. I love mountain climbing. I grew up in California. We used to climb Mount Lassen at 10,000 feet oftentimes and do things like that. So the dream came along that line because the dream uses the images that we are acquainted with, sometimes beyond that, but it reaches into that area. So I had a dream of climbing a mountain and on a trail, and I can still see the picture 50 years, more than 50 years ago. Here's the high mountain. There's the deep valley. The trail was going up. It's a very nice looking trail. My family was following me because at that time we had two children, I think. But as I went up, the trail became narrower and narrower and narrower, and then all of a sudden it began to crumble at my feet. And I've been in those situations. So I awakened trembling. Well, I didn't have to have much help in interpreting that dream because I knew this much, that the dream speaks about the inner self, the inner life. And outwardly, I was defending my way, climbing, you see, and we want to climb our heights and all that. But inwardly, the dream was reflecting what the unconscious or the heart is showing us. And it showed me that if I continued in that way, not only would I fall, but my family would be affected also. Well, that really shook me. And then from there on, I knew the dream was valid. It had something to say. So that opened my life to the whole area of dreams. There was also, at the same time as I was seeking help as far as my life, my family, my ministry, the area of the Holy Spirit, making things practical and real, I opened my life to that. At the same time, I had the psychological field from Morton Kelsey and others, and the combination was wonderful because I'm not a psychologist, and yet I've given many lecture seminars to a psychological group. In fact, we're consultants to the Institute of Christian Counseling and Therapy out of Philadelphia, and it opened the door to the medical field. I'm no knowledge in medicine more than many of you, I suppose, although I listen and try to learn. But as I learned that there are areas of healing that we can learn about, and I went to the medical director, not just simply going off in one spiritual tangent alone. I went to the medical director and I said, I'm learning something about prayer and healing, and I want you to observe me and I want to learn from you. That opened the door marvelously. So I've given many lectures to the medical field and given them lectures on dreams also, because If anyone hears the confessions of people, it's the medical doctors that do, and the hairdressers. But, you see, they wanted this help. And so God continued to open the doors. The dream was an important factor. Opened the door to the various Christian aspects too, because I was speaking to a little Catholic group, and when I was, after I came into a bit of renewal, and while I was talking to this little group about this size, on the things that I had learned, God said to me, in other words, the impression I had, go over and ask that Catholic sister to forgive you for your attitude toward the Catholics. Well, I had never hated the Catholics, but neither had I learned to love them. And loving is accepting. I did just that. I knelt down before her and asked her to forgive you, and she just graciously did that. I never knew what that would do, because that opened the door in my own heart so that I could give 8 hours of lectures in the Vatican. Well, who can get into the Vatican? And, you know, so the dream had a very, very important part. The dream is a reflection. This is a thoroughly biblical subject. For instance, God speaks and then he shows. Take Abram's life. God spoke to Abraham and told him to leave his country and his family. And then in Acts we're told that God revealed himself to Abram. I don't know just how. Then Abram went to the land and he found there the other tribes and he was afraid. And then God showed him a shield. And he said, I'll be your shield and your reward. In other words, he speaks and then he shows us. Then later on, he thought that he wouldn't have any children, or he was afraid that God's promise wouldn't come true. And then God used an illustration. He said, look up at the sky. So he showed him again. He said, can you count the stars? No. He said, that's the way your descendants will be. Then when he really wanted to show him something big, he put him into a deep sleep. And why? Because the dream speaks when the mind is still. And the dream shows us, I'll start with the vision. The vision and the dream are the same thing. They both come from the heart. The Bible used the word heart, and we know it isn't physical. We know it's something that has to do with the deep motivations. Psychology uses the term subconscious or unconscious. Well, what's the subconscious beneath consciousness? What's the unconscious? What we're not conscious of. A great definition, you know. So we don't know, but somewhere from the depth come these pictures, and these pictures come out of life, and God is continuously showing us in a very natural way. It's not the direct voice of God. It's an indirect. It's like a mirror that shows us. And as the mirror is accurate, even when we look at it first thing in the morning, though not very complimentary, yet it's still accurate. And as we change, the mirror reflects the change. The dream does the same thing. The mirror of the dream shows us our present condition. For instance, you dream of walking along and you're about to go over a cliff. What's it saying? It's saying inwardly, you're on solid ground now, but if you continue in the way you're going to go over a cliff. That is, psychologically, emotionally, spiritually, in the inner life. So the dream is a marvelous instrument. It is a very accurate instrument to give us warning, to give us direction, to give us insight about ourselves, what where our mind doesn't contain, what can't handle. So the vision shows us what the eye cannot see. And the dream shows us what the mind cannot or will not receive. That's true with Abraham. You see, God put him in a deep sleep. It is true with Peter. Here comes Peter, who has been trained by Jesus, who becomes the leader of the church, does all kinds of miracles and so on, and yet God could never get it through his head that he was supposed to go to the Gentiles. And Jesus had said that there were others that he had to reach. But Peter's mind couldn't contain that. so, he put him into a trance, which is a form of deep sleep. In other words, says, shut up, so I can talk to you. And then he showed him the vision that showed him that the Gentiles are not unclean, that he could go to them. This is what the dream is doing continuously. It is a reflection of our inner life, of what's going on. Tremendously valuable, because we're related to a counseling institute, as I said, and their work is excellent. However, the dream is the best counselor you can find. You can't pay for a better counselor, because it comes right out of the dreamer's life. Every dream comes out of the setting of one's life. This is true with the biblical dreams, and the dreams of the Bible are basically the same as our dreams, except in content. The fact of neglecting the dream and vision of the Bible is so evident that I ask this question continuously, and I seldom find someone that knows the answer, and yet it's so familiar. What great event of the scripture comes out of five dreams and three visions? Seldom do we know. It's one of the most familiar stories that we know. It's the birth of Christ. And the birth of Christ comes out of five dreams and three visions, and it had to come out of that. Because how could Mary, that maiden there in the village, could ever have imagined, conceived the thought that she would one day become the mother of the Messiah for whom they'd waited for 2,000 years, and that it would be, and he would be the Son of God, and it would be without a man involved? Well, see, it's far beyond her. So God showed her, that is, showed her by sending or revealing the angel to her, so to give her that message, and so with Zacharias. Here's Joseph. I sometimes put it this way, if you want to put it into a modern setting. I say to parents, supposing your son came to you and said, I'm going to marry that girl after all. I know that she's pregnant, but she hasn't been with any man. That pregnancy is of God. And I say, how do you know that? Well, I had a dream that told me that. What would you say? You see, we'd write it off. But isn't that what Joseph faced? And yet, with one dream, he immediately took the responsibility and the risk that's involved in taking Mary. See, the dream is showing us what the mind cannot conceive, can't believe. Joseph couldn't believe that that was true. But in those days, they at least believed in dreams. And why is it that we haven't? That is important. That helps us to understand what our problem is. This goes back to Plato, and I got this primarily from Martin Kelsey, who said in his great man of research that Plato said there are three valid sources of knowledge. Knowledge can come from the five senses, sensory knowledge, which we share with the animal world, or it can come from the reason, where we go above the animal world, or it can come from the spiritual realm. He called it divine madness. Spiritual. But Aristotle came along, and Aristotle, or he with his followers, he ruled out the third. And our Western culture has lived under the Aristotelian philosophy that says valid knowledge can only come from the five senses and reasons. Or this should be five senses here. Or sensory knowledge. So we have lived under that. And the great difference you see when you travel into different countries, and we've had the opportunity of, we follow invitations, not simply, but we've been in traveled through 49 countries in just our lectures of various kinds. And you see this continuously. In the Eastern countries, that have not been affected by Western culture, they have always believed in dreams and visions. No, you can talk about the spiritual realm. You can talk about God and Satan and demons and angels and visions and prayer and all that in the marketplace, because it's part of life. Like in New Guinea, we spent 4 months there. The missionaries had taught and we had in touch with the Lutheran work there too. These missionaries had taught the New Guineans to play football. Well, they had a real difficult time with it in the first place, because they weren't so competitive as we are, so they, when one team would lose the other, they'd help the other team. But the other part of it was that sometime when the other side was winning, then they'd go off in a huddle and put a curse on the other side. Now, they believed in the spiritual realm. Unfortunately, it had gone to these strange sources, you see, for their spiritual power, the wrong sources. However, they've always recognized the spiritual realm. And it's only our Western culture that has denied it. But we've come to the end of it, with Obama, of course, and we recognize there is something more. And it's very interesting. I just read a book on modern physics, which is way, way beyond me. But it has interesting things by it in it. The Presence of the Past by, let's see if I can think of his name. He gave many, many marvelous principles from physics relating to the spiritual realm. Today, physics recognizes the spiritual realm. So, still can't get his name. But at any rate, here we are in a realm now that we have to recognize, because, you see, it's in the spiritual realm that the dreams and the visions come. They don't fit into the realm of the senses. That's why we've had difficulty with other areas, the spiritual, the Holy Spirit, and so on, because it doesn't fit into the five senses and reason. But all the Eastern world and the primitive world has always recognized dreams and visions, and the Eastern Orthodox Church has always recognized the dreams and visions and the Holy Spirit's gifts and so on. So it's only our Western culture that has been affected. Now, this is a tremendous opportunity for us to get our daily help. I would much rather listen to the little dreams night by night and get my correction and guidance than wait until the situation is so, so frightening that I have a nightmare. For my dream was really a nightmare, and there are worse ones, but it was very, very frightening to me because my condition had become that. So the dream is reflecting it. And I'm going to open it up for questions after a little bit, because I have 11 hours of lectures on dreams, so we're just touching a bit of it. Basically our problem is with the language of the dream. The dream speaks a different language than the mind. The mind speaks the language of thoughts and concepts. The dream speaks the language of pictures and symbols. And some people have said, well, if God wants to talk to me, why doesn't he speak in the language I can understand him? Well, the fact of the matter, the language of pictures and symbols is the first language we learn. The child can understand pictures and see and read from them, as it were, and may understand these symbols in dreams much more easily than the adult oftentimes. We have to become simple enough to recognize that it's telling a story, so that when a man said, well, I dreamed that my leg was very badly swollen. In fact, so much so that it was we could just see the vein running down the leg. And then the next dream, for two or three dreams in the same night, are usually telling the same thing. In the next dream, he dreamed that there was a spider sitting on the briefcase. So if you take the first dream, what would you do with that? Well, I simply asked him, what do you use your leg for? Well, he says, to walk. I said, is there something wrong with your walk, the inner walk? Immediately he knew. You see, and then of course, what's the briefcase represent? His work. And it's going to affect that also. So, believe me, when he saw that, he immediately changed his way. Because rationally, he was defending, oh, well, this isn't bad, and so on, what he was doing. But all of a sudden, he saw the effects in this picture, and immediately, he knew. So it's not the interpreter that knows the meaning of the dream. It's the dreamer that only finally knows the meaning of the dream. The interpreter just helps the dreamer find the meaning. So this man didn't know what it meant, so I simply asked him a couple of questions, that's all. And immediately he knew. And you see, the significance is, it's that they call the aha moment. As they see the dream, we might suggest, that's what the interpreter does, is suggest various possibilities. And there's the aha moment, oh, I see it. Now that's true with Pharaoh, it is true with Nebuchadnezzar. Here is, well, take Nebuchadnezzar, the great monarch of the Babylonian Empire, who could order and did order the execution of all these, his wise men and so on. And then when they couldn't help, here's a captive slave that comes and interprets a dream, and Nebuchadnezzar immediately recognizes that that's true. And here is this monarch falls before a captive slave and recognize, like Pharaoh, well, the Spirit of God is in you. You see. Why? Because he had the dream, and he only knew the final meaning. He didn't with his mind at first. But when it was shown to him, he knew it. He recognized it. And you see, here was a few dreams that brought a monarch whom the average person could never reach, brought that monarch to God in a very real way. So the dream is something of tremendous value for the everyday life and guidance. It speaks the language of pictures and symbols, and the best illustration that I know, and I've used this in many countries, I've asked them, if you see a political cartoon of an eagle and a bear fighting, what do you say it is? Well, of course, they know it immediately. No, it's American-Russian conflict. Of course, a little earlier anyway. They recognize that. I say, why do you say that? Why don't you say, well, that's an interesting picture. I didn't know an eagle and a bear would fight. They say, that's ridiculous. Why? Because when we look at a cartoon, we immediately change our approach to it. We do not look at it rationally. We look at it symbolically. We say, oh, of course, that doesn't mean an eagle and a bear fighting. What's a cartoon? And immediately we know, because we are switching our approach. And that's the way it is with the dream and vision, that you must change your approach so that when Pharaoh dreamed that there were seven fat cows being devoured by seven thin ones, and remained as thin as before. It wasn't a Weight Watchers dream, by the way. And then the second dream, which related to it, seven fat ears of grain being devoured by seven thin ones. And you say, that's impossible. Yes. If you look at it rationally, it is. And that's why they say the dreams are crazy, because we look at them rationally. When you look at it symbolically, we were in Australia, going to one area of the country, and the cows were well fed, they were fat. Go to another country, they had 5 years of drought. Their cows were very thin. Well, it's simply taking the illustrations and saying you're going to have 7 years of abundance, and then it's going to be devoured by 7 years of leanness, of drought, and so on. Very simple picture, but also a very vivid one. So the dream is continuously showing us by these pictures. For instance, I gather dreams, of course, from people. and I value them. Here is a dream of a house. The house is probably one of the most common symbols of the dream. For we all need a house of some kind. This comes from New Zealand. In the dream, she said, I was in my grandmother's garden on a farm in Ireland, looking at the farmhouse. It had been beautifully whitewashed and painted and had lovely new lace curtains on the windows. I walked around the side of the house and looked into what I remembered to be the shop window. But now it was a big dining room with lots of tables with white cloths set with lovely silver. I then walked on to enter into the enclosed farmyard, and it too had been all whitewashed, and the hay barns were full of hay, overflowing in fact. Now that was the dream. And the practical thing is, of course, we do our dreaming first, and then we do our praying. So sometime after, she said, having this dream, I was praying, and the Lord brought the dream before me, and I asked the Lord, what did it mean? And he said, it's all yours. Again, I repeated the question, and again the Lord said, it's all yours. So I asked her, what did that farm represent to you? Oh, she said, that was a wonderful place, a place that we just delighted to go as children. We were warmly received. We had almost like heaven to us as children, she said. What's the dream saying? It's saying that there is something waiting for you. God is saying it's available for you. You can have that if you continue to go on in your way. That's what the dream is saying. So it encourages one like a climber. When I was going up the mountain, I had been encouraged. I know it's steep, but it's worth it. The view is up there. Now, we have to recognize that all the language of the dream, the symbols in the dream, come from the dreamer. So this word whitewash, what does whitewash suggest to you? Clean, all right?
Covering up.
All right, covering up. Now there's two meanings. So you always have to find out what it meant to the dreamer. Well, when I was a boy, if farmers didn't have enough money to paint their barns, they would whitewash them and they'd be like new. That's what it meant. Now, a days oftentimes you talk about whitewashing, you're talking about covering up, you see, and hiding it in a sense. So, but that wasn't the meaning to her. It's the dreamer that'll know. Always we have to ask, what does that mean to you? What does that symbol mean? What does that car mean? If you dream that you're driving in a car, or you're driving the car and driving it well, fine. But like a 17-year-old girl said to me, well, I was driving that car on going around the corner in two wheels. And I said, is that what your inner life is like? And her father said, yes. She agreed. Well, it's a picture. Sometimes you're in the back seat of the car, maybe a back seat driver. Maybe you need to come and take control, or whatever. Sometimes you're a passenger, you're being taken for a ride. Many, many meanings, but they'll come out of the dreamer. And the car is often a picture of our own ego, conscious self. Sometimes it may be of our body. But by the way, the dream does have marvelous illustrations of our physical condition. I'm still learning in that area. I want to learn from a psychiatrist, but I've learned a few things. But most commonly, it'll be about our inner life. So when we dream of flying, if we're in a plane, what's the difference between the car and the plane? Basically.
Speed,
yes, but some cars go faster than some planes, so it isn't always speed. But yes, one's on the ground and one's in the earth. What if on the earth, the other's in the air? What takes us off the earth inwardly? Pardon? Yes, finally death. But what is it then?
God?
Spiritual life? Prayer? Imagination? All of these things, you see. So if you're flying in a plane, and that plane, in the dream, that plane is about to crash, then most likely it's saying your flight is about to crash. You better take note of it. Now, there are objective dreams, and by objective dream I mean it's the kind you hear of most often. I dreamed of so-and-so and it happened. They usually say about 5% of the dreams are objective, about others or about the circumstances. Most of the time, 95% of the time, that's what I've found too, the dreams are about ourselves. And all the objects, the things are about ourselves and our condition. However, it was Agnes Sanford that told us this, that it was during the war, a woman said, I dreamed that my son was on a plane, and the plane caught fire and crashed. Oh, that was in the dream. She said, what should I do? Well, Agnes said, you better pray for your son. She did. Her son was in a plane. It was shot down. It caught fire. It crashed, but he was saved. So the dream was saying, you can do something about the situation, showing it. There are those, but rarely. Most of the time, and the safe way to do it is simply to look at it ourselves. Like the Bible has much more to say about what we are to do than what we're to tell others to do. So it isn't wise to tell others, I dreamed of you, because I'll go into that in a minute and then we'll go to questions. But because when we dream of other people, when we dream of animals, I have many, many illustrations of animals, they often speak to us of our emotions. If a huge animal like the elephant, the bear, the rhinoceros that charge head on is about to overrun you, it's your emotions are most likely to overrun you. And that is your temper, your lust, your whatever it might be. If you change, if you do something about it, begin to do something, you may have the animals change and you may have the cat family. It doesn't charge head on, the lion, tiger, and so on. It attacks from behind. And it's saying, you're still being attacked. And I had a period of time when I was running from the lion and the tiger and these animals. I'd run and hide and all that. Until I learned that what to do with fear, always face your fear. So upon awakening, I faced that lion. And I said, who are you? Well, it's interesting. You're really talking to a part of yourself, what you're talking about. So I recognized, okay, I had to deal with that. Take temper, for instance. Temper is, there's a lot of God's energy in there, but it may be misused. So what we do is not suppress it and say, and this actually happened in my life, because I tried to be so nice as a boy that the proper aggressiveness didn't come out. And then when I was irritated, then it'd come out in a temper, you see. Now, it was not suppressing it wasn't the answer. I had to recognize that that was God's energy and I had to incorporate it, but not let it, if I would incorporate it and use it in proper leadership or aggressiveness and so on, that's fine. But if I suppressed it, it would come out in different ways, in wrong ways. So the last time I had a dream of the lion was, I could see this in the dream. You can do a lot of things in the dream. I was walking this way, but I saw that lion behind me coming in great leaps and bounds, big, huge, beautiful lion. I put out my arm, he put his head through here, and we walked off together. And what it said is, I had begun to incorporate that energy, and it became a part of myself. So, great value in it. Now, when we dream of people, we are usually dreaming about ourselves. So when I dream, for instance, when I dreamed of a boyhood friend, I hadn't thought of him for a long time. And the first thought, now, that's usually the key. The first thought that came to me, why do I dream of him? He's the most dogmatic fellow in all my life I've ever met. And I stopped to listen. I was dogmatically arguing a point, and the dream was showing me what there was a part of me that was dogmatic also. And I needed to integrate that properly. So when I dream about a person, I have to ask, what does that person represent to me? What kind of a person? For instance, you may dream of a president, we'll say, but in the dream he's sweeping the floor. Well, your leadership part is sweeping the floor. You better allow it to come into its proper place, you might say. That kind of thing you find in the dream. And by the way, I'm a good missionary here. If anyone needs to learn about dreams, it's the missionaries. Now, we all do, desperately, but they at least work among people, isn't that true, who believe in dreams? And in Africa, we were there for 2 months in Zaire, and people that had come to know Christ out of their witchcraft, but they were told, don't pay attention to your dreams. When I came and taught them how the dream is valid and we can learn from it, they were so thrilled. But the dream always uses the language of the dreamer. So when one pastor came to me and he said, I dreamed that I was trying to get to God, but I couldn't get to him because there were some little men hindering me. But I persisted, and finally I was able to get to God. A ladder was set up and I was able to get to God. Well, I said to the missionary who was translating, what are the little men that represent? Well, he gave a good rational answer. He said, well, maybe pygmies. But that's not the symbol. I didn't know. I had no idea. Until we went into the forest, came to a village, a chief met us, and then he showed us a little hut, 2 or 3 feet high, and sort of teepee fashion. And he opened it, and there were some sticks in there. He said, when a man dies, we cut a stick, we peel the bark, and we name that stick after him, and we call these sticks little men. And we put these sticks into this little hut. Now, when we go on a hunt, we make an offering at this to these little men. Now, what do the little men mean? It's this, they were worshiping the spirits of the dead. And that's what it said was keeping him from getting through to God, you see. But then there was a ladder set up and saying, if you persist, there will be a ladder set up. You'll be shown how this can be. All right, that's just a very brief highlight. So if you'd like to ask some questions, feel free, because most likely the question that you'll ask is some that somebody else would like to ask.
I have a question.
Yes.
I'm wondering if you have some techniques as to how we can remember our dreams so we can analyze them.
Yes. That's the first thing that we have to do. The reason, most common reason that we don't remember our dreams is that we have been so taught that the dream is irrelevant, it's not important, and that we should just reject it. For that reason, we forget. Most likely, when you begin to pay attention to it, you're going to start remembering it. But what's very important is that you write down the dream immediately. Now that takes discipline. But you won't get the meaning of it most likely most of your dreams will just disappear, because when the mind becomes active. So write down, I always have a pencil and pad by my bedside, and I don't like to wake up and disturb myself, but I found it so valuable that I write down the dream. Don't try to figure out the meaning, just write it down. Then, later on, begin to work on it. So that's the first thing, pay attention to it. You may have to persuade yourself or become persuaded to see. The amount of material, at least I can't describe it all, indirectly at least, in the scriptures, about a third of the Bible is at least indirectly related to dreams and visions. When you add up all the direct references, all the prophecies that come out of it, all the major events, it's amazing. There's another thing is, you're not likely to have that, maybe have it here, I don't know. The radio alarm. That's the worst thing for the dream, because it catches your thoughts immediately upon awakening and the dream disappears. C.S. Lewis said, wouldn't you be embarrassed if you were a dream walking around in daylight? And that's the way the dream is, it disappears. Nebuchadnezzar's reason with another. If you really don't want to hear God, you can shut him off for a while, but he'll probably break through in a nightmare. So those are some things. Yes.
Does it mean that we have seasons of dreams? That is, I may go for a long time without any awareness of dreams, and then all of a sudden I'm aware that I have lots of dreams. So sometimes, frequently, I won't be able to recall anything about a dream except that I dream.
Yes. That was Nebuchadnezzar's case. I can't answer that question. Except that there's some general ideas. Sometimes we are so involved in the inner life in other ways, meditation, that kind of thing, and it may, in some measure, take place in the dream, because this is only one of the ways that God speaks. That's about the best I can do with that. Yes.
You're speaking of nightmares. Two or three weeks ago, Carol and I were in the grocery store. And a friend I had met just drinking coffee, and he just said something about how are you today or something like that. And he said, and he just sort of blurted out, he said that his 42-year-old son had committed suicide, and he was just wrestling with that. And then he said that, and so we tried to comfort him in the best way we could then. He said, well, he just had nightmares about Vietnam. And so my question is, how does that come in? Are those experiences of him coming back?
Yes, and that's very common from those in the war like that. There's very likely, I wish I'd had time to bring you one of these dreams, but very likely it is illustrating that there is something of the past, some hurts, some fears, and so on, that have not yet been healed. And they need to be healed. That's why they're coming back in that way.
So under counseling or recognizing it or some productive way?
Yes.
I don't know any more details, but it's just...
That's right. There's a lot of help that's needed in that kind of situation.
Is there an evil force as well?
Yes.
In the spiritual world, there has to be.
All right, that's right. There is an evil force. However, the dream, I'm persuaded from two experiences. One is from the biblical point of view, the dreams are God's instrument to give us a reflection of ourselves. The dream, and it's a safe instrument. Nowhere in the scriptures are we told, be careful about your dreams. There is this kind of exception, and it isn't an exception really. This is a manual, and I have the two books there, because the missionaries would constantly ask you, how do you know the voice of God? So I wrote the one book on the voice of God, learning to recognize. You're always learning that. The other is one of the ways that God speaks. But why the only other thing that might be said is that I'll get the village in the dream. I have these. Here we are. In the to the prophets, to Jeremiah, Ezekiel, and Zechariah, God said, for instance, to Jeremiah, chapter 14 and 23, he said, be careful of those that come to you from their idols. They will have, and these are the quotes, false visions, delusions of their own mind, false dreams, and prophecy out of their own imagination. In other words, if you deliberately go to seances and that kind of thing, where you're apt to have some imitations. That's the only warning we're given concerning dreams. Otherwise, the dreams of the believer and unbeliever are all safe, like Pharaoh, Nebuchadnezzar, and so on. So our dreams are safe, unless we deliberately go to seek for other help. False source. Yes.
Did you say those who begin to practice Satanism then perhaps would be receiving dreams from Satan?
Yes. In Singapore, the pastors were saying, yes, but our fathers are going to, are getting messages of people coming to them in their dreams. And of course, this came from some of their religious practices that were of that sort. Yes, and today it's very unfortunate we have so much of Satanism that's increasing. And we need to learn. By the way, Satan can come into our dreams. It was while I was young as a pastor, I had frightening dreams. Basically, I didn't know how to take care of myself. But, and I knew it was satanic. I knew it was terribly frightening. But the dream was not from the devil at all. The dream was showing me what was going on. And I needed to learn how to take authority over that. And finally, it went away. So the dream is a safe instrument.
Do small children's dreams reflect any certain thing?
Yes. One mother said, well, my child has nightmares, and I prayed that a child wouldn't have nightmares. I said, well, that's like praying you won't hear the fire siren. It's not a good idea. Find out why the child has nightmares, and then begin to deal with that to help that child, because the child may be afraid and all kinds of things like that. And then, you see, you can help the child, because the child may not be able to verbalize what's going on. When another mother said, yes, but we have our breakfast table conversation about dreams. Well, it's great, because it's showing what's going on. Again, when you deal with children's dreams, and most any dreams, there's a dream that oh, by the way, technically we're supposed to close at 11:30, so we'll close, but I was told that if there are one of those that want to stay for questions, you're free to do that. So I don't want to hold anybody up if they're needing to go. But when a boy said to me, 10 or 11 years old, said, I dreamed that I was tied to a railroad track and a train was coming. Well, that was a frightening dream. But I go through a whole process with that dream as to ask, well, what is the railroad track? We have to look at the symbol as it is. And when we look at it as though we came from Mars, and you were asking, what is the railroad track? Then you see, you don't say, well, it's where the train goes, or it's, you simply look at it, it's a piece of steel, rigid, can't be changed, set in the pattern. And then what's the train? The train, again, is something man-made, like the track, of many pieces, and it's powerful, it will crush the child. Now, if it's in school, what could that railroad track be? What would it represent? Something that's rigid, that man has made, it's set in a pattern, it can't be changed. And that little boy is tied to that. Well, it's the course he's taken. Now, the train is coming. What is it that's huge, that looks huge to him? It's man-made, made of steel, and it's coming and it's going to run over. Pardon? No, the teacher isn't man-made. I mean, that's where we have to work at very carefully. The exam, the test. That test is going to... You see, very good illustration. Now, if the child dreams of that, what great value it is that the parents can understand. This is the way the child sees it. And that child may not be suited to that course at all, you see. And the child will be crushed, it will be killed, not physically, but psychologically. That's the whole question of death in the dream, which speaks of not physical death, but psychological death. There are dreams that speak of physical death, but they're symbolic. Now, I have the book that I wrote on dreams, and then the one on the voice of God. There are also some material about the other things you can order. But I just want to leave that there. I'm willing to stay a little while if you want, but I think that's a good enough introduction.
Thank you very much.